This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. April is Arab American Heritage Month, a time of year meant to celebrate the history and culture of Americans who claim ancestry from the Middle East and North Africa. Such recognition was hard-fought in light of the decades of demonization that Arab Americans faced after the September 11, 2001 attacks. But in 2024, when Israel is carrying out a genocide in Gaza fueled by U.S. weapons, Arab Americans face a dilemma about how to celebrate their heritage. My guest, Stephanie Abraham, has written about this in a new story for Yes Magazine. Stephanie is a nonfiction writer, media critic, and public relations practitioner. Her work has appeared in numerous publications, including Yes. She was part of the editorial collective that founded the feminist magazine Makeshift and was the founding editor of another feminist magazine called Loudmouth. She's currently the senior marketing communications specialist at Cal Poly Pomona, and she's been a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back to the show, Stephanie.
Thanks, Sonali. It's so good to be back.
So here we are in the midst of this horrific genocide. We're more than 6 months in. And as you point out in your story, 32,000 casualties, and that is the official death count, of which far too many are children. So as an Arab American yourself, what does it feel like to think about Arab American Heritage Month? You know, a time when Arab Americans are supposed to be flying the American flag and claiming their rightful place as full citizens of the United States. But many of them are seeing people that look just like them, or even having relatives and family members facing a devastating genocide. What's it felt like for you personally?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Sonali. I feel like you phrased it so well in your opening, like at a time when we're facing a genocide of our people funded by our own country as Arab Americans, how do we celebrate? And that is, worthy of a scary face emoji. What do we do? And I feel like, I really have not embraced Arab American Heritage Month. I think the identity months come with, they're sort of fraught, a lot of times they're assimilationalists. They're like, look at what we've done to build this country, totally ignoring Native Americans and our history of sort of genocide on our own land. And also we live these identities every day of the year, right? So you and I aren't just women in March during Women's History Month. And I'm not just Arab American during April. But that being said, I think there is a unique opportunity right now to really lean into figuring out what it means to celebrate while not looking away from the genocide and from the real heartbreak. And I think it's a good opportunity to advocate and to activate all of us.
So in your story, you talk about, or you talk to several folks who are involved in thinking about these issues. In particular, one person who was actually involved in getting this month recognized as Arab American Heritage Month. Tell me about some of the people that you spoke to in writing the story about rethinking Arab American Heritage Month.
Sure. So I spoke with Warren David, who's the co-founder of Arab America Foundation. They also run the website arabamerica.com. And that organization was really, really the sort of wind beneath the wings of trying to get April recognized as Arab American Heritage Month. And his stance is, there's so much about our people and all of West Asia, often described as the Middle East, but also Central Asia, sort of thinking about Afghanistan, Iraq, all these countries that the U.S. has invaded, and it's all over our pop culture. Like, Arabs are portrayed as terrorists, particularly males, men, and women are portrayed as sort of voiceless and oppressed, particularly Muslim women who wear the hijab. So it's just like constant barrage of media. And so he sees Arab American Heritage Month as really an excuse and an opportunity to say, hey, we're human. Can you recognize us as human beings? And I think partly that's why the month has sort of rubbed me the wrong way, because it's actually quite difficult to face the fact that anti-Arab racism is still so bad that we're begging people to acknowledge our humanity. And indeed, so much of the messaging coming out of Palestine is, these are women and children. Like, how many images do you have to see for you to recognize our shared humanity? And so, you know, we can't have this discussion outside of empire, outside of US imperialism and our tremendous militarism. This year's budget for the Department of Defense is $1.6 trillion. And I heard a PR professional from the military in 2019, when the military spending had been $700 billion in 2018, which is like, these numbers I can't even comprehend. But he said, you know, it's our job to justify that spending to the American people. And so the way that is justified is to create an enemy within our minds. And for the, certainly since 9/11, as you mentioned, but even, you know, even before that, but certainly after, it's been this axis of evil idea that George W. Bush coined for Iraq, Iran, and even South Korea. But sort of this Orientalism of, you know, what Edward Said called Orientalism, just sort of seeing the Orient as, you know, the enemy, right? And we have to have an enemy. And so Arab American Heritage Month is an opportunity to undo that and really celebrate our history, our poetry, our culture, and say, like, we're not just this enemy that you've been taught to see us as.
One of the other people that you spoke to for your story is Rana Sharif of the Palestinian Feminist Collective. And tell me a little bit about what her take on Arab American Heritage Month is.
Yeah, I love, thank you. I love Rana's take. She said, you know, what if we see this as not a one and done, not just a month, but really an opportunity to use it as sort of diving into year-long organizing. And she said, you know, what she really thinks about is, how do we, one, you know, teach people that they're powerful, and two, that collectively our power is really strong, and sort of activate that, right? So if we think about like sending letters to our congresspeople, for example, what if we organize our block or our colleagues at, you know, in the lunchroom, or so we're not only acting as individuals, but we're working together collectively, and we can see our power to really change things.
And so how can Arab American Heritage Month be a time then to center Gaza and to talk about Gaza? Because it is so fraught. People are getting, you know, fired from tenured positions. The crackdown on free speech when it comes to free speech about Palestine has always been problematic and always been there on campuses. But particularly now, it's heightened. And we're supposed to sort of not think about that. The Arab Americans are supposed to not think about that. And it's supposed to instead, as I mentioned earlier, wave the American flag. So how can this community center Gaza, this community and its allies and advocates center Gaza and the genocide in Gaza? You have a number of recommendations in your story about how to do that this month in April.
Yeah, so I think Rana Sharif's, you know, she said that there's an active genocide happening. So number one has to be to stop that, to get a permanent ceasefire, to turn on the water and the electricity, to stop, you know, what the UN has called the starvation campaign from Israel on Palestinian people. So that's number one. And I think figuring out collectively how to stop that is really important. And there's multiple ways to do that in small and big ways, right? So for example, as I mentioned, you know, with our government officials who don't seem to be listening very well to us, but interrupting business as we can, you know, seeing, for example, where our money is, you know, there's a big opportunity for financial advocacy. If you're part of a retirement plan, you know, where are those funds? Are they part of genocide or of funding the genocide? There's, you know, the Palestinian Feminist Collective has a tremendous toolkit. It's a digital toolkit that I highly recommend. It can It can be, you know, something that you and your friends or neighbors or place of worship or colleagues unpack together. It's very thorough. They put it out in October. And, you know, in there, there's like books to read, films to watch, the boycott, divestment, sanction movement, how to be part of BDS on a personal level and a more wide sweeping level. So I feel like there's lots of ways to do this. And another important thing to remember is, of course, you know, while advocating to stop the genocide, remembering that Palestinians, you know, those of us who, of course, recognize that they're not barbarians, which is what we're sort of being fed by the media, that recognize their shared humanity, we sometimes get confused and think of them as sort of a monolithic, downtrodden, oppressed people. And I feel like it's really important for us to notice just their ability to savor life and to be alive, even in the harshest conditions that many of us would give up hope in. So for example, on TikTok, some videos of the dubka have gone viral, which is a folk dance traditionally danced in a circle in 17 countries, Palestine being one of them. And people are teaching that to the youth right now. You know, we're talking about youth who are being starved, who have lost their home, and they're learning how to dance, and you just see their joy come out. And so really, like, how do we do both of those things? How do we stop this genocide and not turn away from the brutality while also noticing the resilience and the joy and the culture and the life within Palestinian culture?
And there's also the boycott, divestment, sanctions effort that people can plug into, and you can get apps to figure out how to avoid products that are fueling the genocide. There's active ways for people to get involved. Of course, they can do that all year round, but if they haven't yet done so, April is a great month to do it, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And actually, there's a new app created by a Gazan that's called No Thanks. And you can literally scan the barcode in the store and see if the product is problematic or something that you can feel easy, you know, feel okay buying. But also, like you said, talking about, you know, the suppression right now in workplaces and in higher ed institutions and schools. And I argue in the piece that even putting up a virtual background honoring Arab Americans can actually be seen as a pretty radical act now, which I think is both tragic and, you know, sort of enlightening. But St. Jude Research Hospital has a really beautiful one. That hospital was founded by Lebanese American Danny Thomas, and it quotes Khalil Gibran, who was a Lebanese American poet, many argue the first Arab American writer. And it says that he who denies his heritage has no heritage. And I love this in particular because my auntie Sophie was part of the greater Syrian, wave of immigrants about 100 years ago. She needlepointed this, and it hung on her wall for her entire life. So I feel that there's big and small ways right now to be part of, you know, really resistance of anti-war resistance in ways that will be noticed.
Well, finally, Stephanie, is there ever a way to have a Cultural Heritage Month that isn't performative? I mean, I think about Black History Month, which might be, I might be wrong, but I think it is the longest cultural month that we have for any particular non-white ethnic group. And a lot of Black Americans have used that as a way to really talk about issues and as a way to challenge the status quo. And I'm wondering if you think that there's a way for Arab American Heritage Month to kind of aspire to that, although it's a very young month still.
Yeah, I do feel like that is part of the movement. I mean, although, you know, referring to Black Heritage Month or Black History Month, it's the shortest month of the year. And so many people have said that's actually part of anti-Blackness. But, you know, that is part of the The rub with months is that it offers organizations and brands and corporations to sort of perform their diversity, equity, inclusion efforts. So for example, during Pride Month, they might change their social media handles to have a rainbow flag when really they have like almost no queer employees, for example. So they can sort of look like they're doing stuff when really, if you look at things, they're not doing much. But that being said, I think it is, you know, it does offer an opportunity for a representation that might not otherwise be there, you know, and if it's gonna force brands to you know, evaluate things in with fresh eyes, I think that's great. But more than that, I think it's really an opportunity for us to get activated, right? And there's a slogan going around like, I'm not here to save Palestine. Palestine is here to save me. Right. And so we can use this as an opportunity to sort of overcome our feelings of paralysis, our hopelessness, feeling like we can't do anything, and get activated to actually see that, you know, as Rana Sharif says, we are powerful and we're even more powerful collectively.
Stephanie, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And we'll post a link to your story in Yes Magazine from our website. Good luck to you.
Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Stephanie Abraham, a writer and media critic, and you can read her latest story at Yes about Arab American Heritage Month in light of the Gaza genocide at yesmagazine.org. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.